And I am joined by Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Mary is part of the horticultural science faculty and extension horticulturist. If you have a question, lawn and garden question, Mary is the person you want to talk with. There's the pressure.
No pressure, right, Denny? Good morning. Good to see you again.
By the way, we were talking off air. If you have a lawn or garden question, call it in or text it in. It's the same number, 651-989-9226. That orange marmalade was unbelievable, still is, because...
Glad you enjoyed that,
really?
Denny.
Yes, do you do that often?
Amazing. Well, usually every January is usually when I pick those little Calamondin oranges, and this year was a bumper crop, so I had so much I could give it away.
And Dennis mentioned a friend of his making an orange chicken
dinner. Orange chicken, yes. There are some recipes with orange rinds or orange marmalade.
Now, what kind of little oranges are these?
Calamondin. So Calamondin, yes, you won't find this orange for sale in the supermarket because it's extremely tart.
Very.
It's very intense. It's a very small orange, 1 to 2 inches in diameter. It's kind of a weedy orange. It grows like a weed. So in the north, we can grow this as a house plant, and it will bear oranges. And the public can see a Calamondin orange out at the Arboretum.
Oh, at the Arboretum? Has it?
In the conservatory, there's a Calamondin orange with a lot of oranges on it. And so, my grandkids and I picked, I had 166 oranges on the tree. So I could make several pints of marmalade. And yes, I'm glad you guys enjoyed that.
Well, I'm going to try that. I'm going to look up a recipe. And maybe Sandy and I can, put something together.
Right. So it's, is it more of an Asian twist with soy sauce? It's a good contrast for chicken.
I'm ready for it now. How about you? All right. If you have any kind of, I said, a lawn or garden question, they're already coming in. 651-989-9226. Same number for the text messages for Mary Meyer. Barb is calling in from Princeton right away this morning. Barb, you on with Mary?
Good morning. I've got two Christmas cactus that are starting to wilt, and I just realized I've been watering them with water from my laundry tub, which is connected to my water softener. And I'm wondering if they are getting too much salt in that water, and if so, should I repot them? I've been using distilled water now. But I don't know if that's going to be enough to flush out any salt that might be getting in there and causing them to wilt.
Ideally, yes, you don't want to use softened water, but I have to admit that I am not good about that in my house. I just use the regular water coming out of the tap. I know Julie does not. Julie will talk about using water that is not softened and then more of a neutral pH. That's the other issue. But I think, Barbara, what might have happened is you may have been overwatering your Christmas cactus. So the wilting is a sign of overwatering just as much as it is underwatering. So if you can have an alternative to the softened water, I would do that. But I would really pay attention to how much you're watering it and allow the plant to completely dry out to the touch in between waterings. You want to make sure you have a good drainage hole in the bottom of the pot. The cactus really do prefer clay pots that really dry out rather than a plastic pot. And double potting is not a good idea because that holds, then the soil doesn't dry out as quickly. So you can try repotting it, but I think the best thing is just to really reduce the amount you're watering it.
Okay. Yes, and Julie, like you said, Mary, Julie does recommend, and we do. We're lucky enough to at home have a Kinetical reverse osmosis drinking water system, and that's what we use to water our plants. And Julie says, well, you can go to the grocery store, keep filling up your jugs there.
Yes, you can do that too. So many people have that bypass, where it doesn't go through or alternative sources
that's
of water,
true.
Rainwater, and things like that. That really is much better. And over the years, the high pH in the water and then the softened water, yes, you can have problems with that.
For sure. Right. Thank you, Barb. Good point. Thanks for bringing it up. There's a line open if you want to use the phone to talk with Mary, or send a text if that's easier. Same number, 651-989-9226. Texter wants to know, Mary, when is the best time to prune grapevines?
Right now is a great time for pruning grapes. It's easy to see the plants because the leaves are off, so you can see the buds and count that. There are some really detailed systems for pruning grapes, counting the buds and counting the number of main vines and the number of buds on the vines and so on. Grapes probably respond to pruning more than any other plant that we grow. They love to be pruned, and they respond with great vigor after they have been pruned. So pruning is a great idea. So now really is a great time for pruning all of our main big trees as well.
Okay.
So oaks, we still have through the month of March now that you can prune oaks, and pruning large trees, pruning fruit trees, apples, and so on. This is ideal time to do that.
Is there a type of grape? I remember my folks in their yard had a grape. I think they were like Concord grapes or whatever.
Yes, right. Yeah, that old Concord type grape is one of the hardiest ones, so it's pretty reliable, easy to grow here. Matt Clark, who is our grape breeder at the University of Minnesota, is working on improved hardy table grapes for Minnesota. So we'll see how that goes. He has hundreds of selections he's working on, but right now, you know, we're so used to all these wonderful grapes, the Thompson seedless, the green grapes,
yeah.
Black grapes, red grapes. None of those really are very hardy for us in Minnesota. They're all come from California. And so if we got some different varieties without seeds, especially for Minnesota, that would be a big improvement.
I should say.
Yeah.
651-989-9226 is the phone number, is also the text number. Let's grab a phone call before we take a break. Bruce is calling from New Prague. Bruce, good morning.
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
My question is, for starting seeds in the house, tap water that's softened or unsoftened water?
So unsoftened is preferable. If you can do that, that has a lower salt content, and so that is really better to use for plants. Good for you, Bruce, getting your seeds started. So that's one of the things we can be doing this time of year.
Yeah, if you can get unsoftened water for your plants, that's still the best, as
right.
we mentioned.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Bruce. Appreciate the call. There's a text that says, I remember planting a couple of small false indigo plants, but doubted they could have spread this quickly. So how do I recognize it if it really is false indigo when it comes up, or some weed that resembles it?
Yeah, so I think this person with false indigo, that's a baptisia. That's one of our native wildflowers or prairie plants. That's in the legume family. So that has a leaflet with three small leaves on it. It's kind of a grayish, glaucous, light blue color. That's quite distinctive. So I would actually Google Baptisia seedlings and see if you can find some images online with that. It's quite a challenge identifying seedlings when they come up. But there are some literature on that, especially weed seedlings, identifying weed seedlings, because that's a challenge for all of us as we look for what's good and what's bad coming up.
Okay.
And the other thing is, you can always just wait. You know, don't pull up anything. Wait till things get 6 inches or so, and then it's much easier to identify.
Yeah, have a little patience, eh?
Have patience, right.
Hang on, Mary. We'll take a quick break, inviting our listeners. Don't wait now for your lawn or garden question. A lot of times we get backed up toward the last half hour, and we don't get the chance to answer all your questions. So call them in, text it in as soon as you can. Same number applies, 651-989-9226. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We are here on CCR every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your phone calls and text messages. Mary Meyer's in today from the U of M, and I know we're going to talk about the Arboretum. Is that flower show just about over?
This is the last weekend of the flower show, today and tomorrow, so be sure and get out there. It's beautiful. Wonderful flowers to see, several different vignettes and displays, and a beautiful selection of orchids in the conservatory. Mm. Very, very nice. So the 3 mile drive is not open to traffic, but you can walk around. I talked to someone yesterday who said no ice at all on 3 mile drive for a walk. So great place
what
to
get great
out.
What a great weather weekend for,
yeah,
for getting out
to get there. Out, see the flowers inside and go for a walk outside, have a cup of coffee at the restaurant. Great place to visit this weekend.
Right there on Highway 5 and 41, yes. That's the closest intersection.
Right,
there,
southwest right? Of the cities.
Yeah,
yes.
Easy to get to. All right, let's go back to the phones. Let's see who's been waiting. Georgine is calling from Forest Lake. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a hydrangea, and I don't know what to do with it. I didn't do anything with it in the fall. The leaves are still up dried in the air, and what should I do with it come spring?
Well, it depends. A lot of times people worry about pruning hydrangeas. How should I prune it? What should I do? And for the most part, I don't prune any of my hydrangeas except to take off the dead flowers. So if you have dead flowers on the tips, sometimes I take those off. But otherwise, you don't have to do anything. There is quite a variety of hydrangeas out there. And some of them, if you prune off the stems in the spring, you're actually weakening the plant. So unless you've got a great big hydrangea that's, 10 feet tall and you're worried about it getting too big, I wouldn't worry about pruning it. You're best off to just let the buds come from wherever they are. And hopefully you'll have a lot of blooms again this year.
Very good. Thanks, Georgine. Judy is calling in from Blaine, I believe, this morning. Judy, you're on with Mary.
Yes, good morning. I'm sure you've answered this question numerous times, but I have a peace lily, and I've had it. It'll be about 3 years in September. And every so often, not a lot of leaves, but too many, get brown on the tips and crunchy. And I'm wondering, okay, they're back again. Now, what's going on?
So that peace lily is one of our flowering house plants that it really has a great ability to grow indoors with low light conditions, but it's also very sensitive to too much or too little water. And both of those scenarios will cause the leaf tips to turn brown. Peace lilies in their natural habitat grow in almost standing water. So they like a lot of water. So if you overwater them, they can kind of take that. But then if they dry out too much, some of their roots and then some of the leaf tips are going to brown. It's really a challenge, Judy, to grow a peace lily without any brown leaves for anybody. So almost always some of those tips are going to get brown. That's kind of more sensitive in that way. And yet at the same time, it's a pretty tough house plant. And it's one that will usually bloom if you have medium to higher light conditions.
All right. Thanks, Judy. Let's grab a call from Diana, then we'll get some text messages. Diana, you are on with Mary here on CCO. Diana, good morning.
Good morning, Denny and Mary. My question is, the front of my house faces west, and I want to find out what kind of shrubs I could plant in front of my house that are colorful, that won't get too big. I was wondering what Mary's suggestion would be for that.
What do you think, Mary?
Well, the first one that comes to mind when you say colorful are spirea or maybe weigelia. Those are both ones that have flowers on that are tough shrubs. Those are both deciduous. In other words, they're not going to be evergreen. West-facing is a good amount of sunlight, but it isn't as harsh as a south face is. But we do have a wonderful resource on the website. Julie Weisenhorn has put together a great plant elements of design. And you can put in the criteria if you want something that's 2 to 3 feet tall with flowers. You can put that in the search engine for this plant elements of design, the plant database, and it will come up with many alternatives with the pictures, and then you can select from those. So that's a great resource that's on the extension.umn.edu website.
I was hoping you'd say that because that is, yeah. I've used that as a resource for that very thing.
It's there are thousands of plants in there. And so if you just put the height criteria, you'll get a big list. But then if you narrow it down with flowers, that's going to be fewer. But spirea, there are lots of wonderful spireas that are on the market now. And Weigelia is the same thing as well. If you like purple foliage, there are some dwarfer forms of the... I'm drawing a blank now that I said that, and I'm seeing the shrub in my mind. The purple shrub, the purple flowers, I'll think of it in a minute, but it's so, there used to be just tall forms, now they're short forms. Little Devil is the cultivar name. Oh, okay, I'll think of it in a second.
It'll come to you about 3 o'clock tomorrow morning.
No, I'll think of it in a minute.
All right. Thanks, Diana. Texter says, a couple of things actually. When should I start impatient seeds? That's the first question.
I would do that right now. The impatient seed are kind of some of the longest ones to grow. You can do that quite successful, be quite successful with that. If you save your own, you'll end up with all old magenta ones. But the new ones, there are new disease-resistant forms of impatiens now available. And so that right now is a good time.
And the other part of the question is really a programming idea. Says, can you or could you give a weekly update on what seeds to start that week?
Yes, that's a good idea. That is a good idea because we normally think of backing up from the frost date 6 to 8 weeks, which is like where we are now, and then we get down to 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, 2 to 3. Yeah, good idea.
Yeah.
What seeds to start now? I like that.
And we appreciate the ideas. And you guys really, you and your colleagues, ask for some suggestions to what to feature on the show.
Yes, we do. Our listeners have great ideas. So that's wonderful to have that.
Very good. Great. Again, 651-989-9226. That's the text number. That's the phone number. So either one, whatever is easier for you. When is the best time, texter says, to trim back? I think they mean a spirea. And how much can I trim it back?
You can prune the spireas right now, but I would wait until just after it flowers. If you're pruning it right now, you're going to take off the flower buds because spirea is one of the earliest plants to bloom in the spring. So just after flowering is the best time.
Well, here's a fun one. Not that they all aren't. Your show is my favorite in caps. I listen every Saturday and now bought an Arboretum membership due to the show. I brought my beautiful hibiscus in, and it blooms about once a week. The leaves are now covered with little white spots. The spots don't move. There are no webs. Do you have any thoughts?
Wow, the spots don't.
So there's kind of good news, bad news.
Well, I'll tell you this. The fact that it's flowering is a really good sign. So the plant has enough food reserves. Everything is wonderful. Otherwise, it wouldn't put out the flowers. So I'm wondering if those spots are some other when something else happened to it that really was not a pest problem, but somehow burned some holes or made some holes on the leaves that really are not an issue. So I would not worry about that. As long as it's clean, you can't see any webs or anything that would be spider mites, white flies would be flying around, then it's not anything to worry about.
Well, good. That's great.
Yeah.
And very glad you joined the Arboretum. That's good.
Yes, that's wonderful. That's great.
Mary, we need to take a break. For our listeners, we have about another half hour of the show to go, but if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, call it in or text it in as soon as you can, 651-989-9226, so we can get to answer those for you. And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here with Mary Meyer from the U of M. And Mary, I know we wanted to kind of backtrack, catch up a little bit on previous callers and texts.
Yes. Now, Judy, with your peace lily, yes, I went on and on about why that happens, but any brown that's on the leaves, you can actually trim that off with scissors if it bothers you. I've done that before. And but it's pretty inevitable a lot of times with peace lily. So you can trim off the brown if you want to. And just try to have more even watering, not uneven watering. And then the shrub question with the purple foliage
shrub
is nine bark. So Nine Bark Little Devil is a cultivar, a short cultivar that was developed by David Zlizak right here from the University of Wisconsin River Falls.
Oh, okay.
So that's an improved dwarfer form of Nine Bark. It has flowers as well as the purple leaves, the purple foliage. So that was another recommendation of what shrubs to plant.
Excellent. Right. 651-989-9226 is the phone number. It's also the text number. And keep in mind that Mary will be here for about another 15, 18 minutes or so. Betty's calling in from St. Louis Park, I believe, with a question. Betty, you're on with Mary.
Thank you. I have an orchid. It was given to me. It's in an oval pot that's about 12 inches at the longest side, and it's 6 inches high. It's some people say it's got two pots inside of it, and it's very steep. The instructions that came with it said to put three cubes of ice. I've had it about a month. It was so steep, I put some toothpicks in it to hold the ice cubes on it. And on the right side, the leaves are happy. On the left side, three leaves are falling down. I don't know if it doesn't get enough water or it gets too much on the left side. What do you think?
Well, the ice cube idea is a way to give minimal water to orchids. We actually wrote an article about that. You can find it on our Yard and Garden News. But the best way to water is to about once a week or 10 days is to water your orchid in the sink. Just wet it well and let it drain out in the sink. So I think, Betty, if you look really closely at that, when you talk about double pots, you might have an attractive, very nice pot on the outside, but on the inside you'll have a plastic container, and sometimes it's see-through, clear plastic container, very thin, that's holding that orchid. That's how they're produced in the greenhouses, and then they put them in the beautiful ceramic pots and sell them. So if you can look closely and see if you can lift the whole orchid out with that little transparent plastic pot, then you water that in the sink. There's probably a hole in the bottom of that. That's a better way to water your orchid than the ice cubes. Now, the ice cubes are kind of easy, but they it's really difficult to get enough water that way. Mm-hmm. And very cold ice on orchid roots can kill the roots. So if you look up in the extension.umn.edu website and search orchid watering, the article, I think, will come up about the ice cubes, but also there's care of orchids there that will help you.
That's great timing, Mary, because I was just looking at a text that came in a few minutes ago about the care of orchids. So that's They were driving, so they couldn't call it in.
Right. Yeah. Julie is a great aficionado with orchids. She has successfully reflowered orchids where I enjoy the orchids and then I give them away or I throw them away after they're done flowering because I have not been successful in getting them to bloom.
Okay. Texter wants to know, what can I plant for butterflies?
Wow, there's so many great native plants that you can put in for butterflies. Many of our native perennials, the Liatris, Monarda, Phlox is a great one. Many of the chrysanthemums, asters in the fall. Some of our early spring blooming bulbs, crocus and the scillas. Bees, butterflies really like those. So we do have a lot of information on that on plants for pollinators at the extension.umn.edu website. So a lot of resources now on that.
Really? I mean, it is a great resource for so many things.
It is, and they're really we can make a difference with individual homeowner properties with plantings. Even in urban areas, we can create a lot of habitat for butterflies and bees.
And bees as well.
Bees as well,
you
right?
Bet. Mm-hmm. Texter says this, Mary, starting a veggie garden this spring. What's the best mixture or combination of soil to use? Black dirt, sand, compost, peat moss, etc.?
Well, I would urge you to have a soil test of your native soil that you're going to be using where you're going to plant the vegetable garden to see what the nutrient levels are and the organic matter levels. We have a lot of wonderful soils here in Minnesota. The most difficult place to grow a vegetable garden are the compacted soils where there has been construction, or in urban soils where you might have contaminants. So the basic soil test will not test for contaminants, but it will test for phosphorus and potassium, pH, and organic matter, and give you recommendations on that. So I would start with that, and then if you can add any type of organic matter like compost or manure, things like that, that will improve the tilth of your soil. I would work on that. But first, I'd get a soil test before you think about really adding anything else.
And I know you and your colleagues, Mary, will bring in, as we get closer, when we start seeing our lawns again,
yes.
We'll bring in a turf expert.
Oh, yes, right. Yes, we're actually hiring a new extension educator, a position similar to Sam Bowers.
Oh, yeah.
I remember Sam used to come in here. Right. So hopefully that person will be on board before the end of the summer, I would hope. And yes, and we can talk about specific lawn care as well.
Which we will anyway.
Yes, we will anyway. It's nice to have the experts.
Absolutely. Texter says this, Mary, I have a 20-plus-year-old Hoya, which has not bloomed in the past 2 years. I've not made any changes to its care. How can I promote blooming this year?
So, wow, good for you. I'd love to have a 20-year-old Hoya. So
what do they look like?
This is a wax plant. It's kind of a viney plant, and it has a big, really quite sophisticated flower.
Mm.
So it's very complicated kind of looking flower, but very pretty with a wax plant, multiple little flowers together. But, you know, if you've had this plant flower in the past, you're probably in the same, doing pretty much everything the same. So I would consider a couple things, fertilizing it. And now that the days are getting longer, our houseplants are really going to start to grow again. So I'd consider upping the fertility fertilizer that you're putting on it. And then I'd think about repotting it. Hoyas will often flower in a small pot, pretty confined. But, you know, 20 years is a long time to have a plant, so I would think about putting it in a different pot, not necessarily a lot bigger, but just adding some more soil with different nutrients, and hopefully that will help it.
All right, very good. 651-989-9226, that's the phone number, that's the text number here on CCO. A lot of text, Mary, which is not unusual. Here's another one, says, I have two fairly small but growing peace lilies that get many yellow leaves. The soil feels dry in the surface a couple of days after they are watered. They have good drainage. Water more often, or am I giving them too much, but don't know if or when the surface is quite dry? What do you think about that?
I would try to water them a little more often and make sure that that soil is actually getting wet thoroughly. Sometimes with the soilless mixes and synthetic mixes, you can put water on a plant, and it will water kind of around the outside and start coming out the bottom without the root ball actually getting wet. So you want to make sure that you do saturate that root ball and it's getting thoroughly wet. Maybe put it in the sink and have the water sit in water for a few minutes so that it actually can absorb the water in the root ball. Because in a day or two, it shouldn't be dried out again. It should take more like a week.
Oh, okay.
To water.
All right. The texter says this, we have a rhubarb plant that we felt was in a very odd location, basically in the middle of our lawn. It brought us a lot of rhubarb, but we wanted to move it. So we dug it up, replanted it about 40 feet away, but close to a tree. Ever since then, it has really struggled. It does not seem like it's completely dead, but it doesn't give us any pickable rhubarb anymore.
Yeah, it's like that full sun condition. So it wasn't so good for you, but it was good for the rhubarb, because the rhubarb really does need full sun conditions. If it has competition with trees, that it's just too much. So it's probably just going to be a while till it gets reestablished there. But it needs at least 6 hours of sun a day, and better if it's more than that. So you might want to try a new – you might have better luck with a brand new rhubarb plant, because it would have an established root system, maybe. But basically full sun is the answer.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Hang on, Mary. We need to take a quick break here. We have more show to come. We have more text messages to answer. And if you want to call in your lawn or garden question, that's good too. 651-989-9226. And we are back talking lawns and gardens, as we do every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your phone calls and text messages. Mary Meyer is with us from the U of M, answering those questions. Mary, as usual, tons of text messages. Let's see how many we can field before you have to leave us. A butterfly garden. That's what this person is interested in creating on the west side of my home. Is this an appropriate side to do this? And if so, what can I do now to start it? There's grass there now, they say.
Yes, that's a fine place to do that. The west side will get quite a bit of sun, which most of the butterfly plants like, and butterflies like sunny conditions as well. So what you can do right now, I would make a list of plants that you're thinking about buying, from things that bloom early in the spring to from April to October. That's the biggest challenge with butterfly gardening, is getting something that blooms all season long. So one plant won't do that, but scillas in the springtime to asters in the fall. So you want to think about the whole season in front of you. And bulbs are good as well as perennials. There are some annuals that work well for butterflies. Tithonia is the butterfly plant. That's a big plant known for attracting butterflies. As far as if it's sod there now and soil, you might want to think about how you're going to remove that top sod layer and then plant below that. Sometimes people actually put down a mulch, a cover of cardboard, newspaper or something, to kill the grass and then plant in between that. But if it's a really big area, I would only do a small part of it at a time.
Oh, okay. Good suggestion. Another hibiscus question, Mary. All the leaves in my hibiscus plant are turning yellow and dropping. This happened a year ago as well. Any idea why?
Yeah, it's tough to get enough light inside for the hibiscus. And usually we'll see that leaf drop when they come in the fall of the year when you bring them in. But it can happen throughout the year as well. They might put out leaves and then not have enough light. So then they drop the leaves because they can't produce enough food to sustain all those leaves. But hibiscus are really tough. If you've gotten it this far through the winter, just hang on for a few more weeks, and then you'll be able to put it outside again.
Mary, you and I were talking about grapes at the first part of the show. A texter wants to know, where can I go to buy Minnesota grape cultivars? The garden centers
carry
those?
Yes. There are garden centers that carry those. So I would try the big garden centers, Bachman's, Dundee's, Otten Brothers, Mickman Brothers, Paul's Garden Center. There are a lot of them. I would try those. I would basically look online at these different garden centers' websites. There's also a resource, plantinfo.umn.edu, that's run through our library system, the Anderson Library at the Arboretum, that is a source for locating plants. We'll tell you where you can buy those, retail versus wholesale nurseries.
Never really had a question like this, and maybe this is not appropriate, but a texter says, I'm looking for someone to hire, a master gardener maybe, for help with what to plant for the front of my house. I took a class by master gardeners, was told I could hire help that is not a large landscaping company. How do I find somebody for the East Metro? I have not been able to find anyone. I'm not sure if master gardeners do that.
Most
kind of
usually,
work.
Master gardeners will not do that.
I didn't
usually
think so.
They're going to only give out educational information. You know, if you want to pursue that, and you're the West Metro, so if Hennepin, you can always
East Metro.
Oh, sorry. So you can also Ramsey County Master Gardeners do have a website. You could contact them for recommendations, but they're not going to come out and work on individual. Homeowner properties.
Right, landscaping.
That's not
work,
something
yeah.
that they do. No.
Yeah, it's tough work. That landscaping
yeah,
work
it is
tough work.
But that's what garden centers do. So I would contact garden centers.
Yeah.
Many garden centers will come out and do estimates or free estimates and so on, and you could talk to them. So that's really the best bet. Master gardeners are sources of educational information, but not work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A daughter texter says, gave me an azalea last fall, barely living. Now it is healthy and covered with white flowers. Is it hardy? Can I leave it outside over the next winter, or is it best as a houseplant in winter?
It's best as a houseplant. Most of the florist hydrangeas are not our hardy florist azaleas. They're not hardy azaleas. So they're right. They're just nice as a houseplant. You can plant them outside. There's a chance they might bloom again this summer, but I would doubt if it would live through the winter.
All right, let's see what else we've got before we run out of time. Texas says, I have three peony plants. Every summer after blooming, the leaves get black spots. All three are south-facing.
Yeah, those black spots are botrytis. So botrytis is a very common fungal disease that gets on peonies. It's not fatal, but it can weaken the plants. So try to keep the foliage as dry as possible. If you can improve the air circulation, that's another thing to do. The other thing is in the fall, when they get so many black spots on them, I cut down those peony foliage and take the black spots and put them in a municipal compost site. Or a home compost might not get hot enough. But if you remove those, the sanitation can help minimize the botrytis problem.
Texter wants to know what the best time and method for trimming white pine.
So you can prune white pine right now in the dead of the winter. Sometimes people prune the pines as the tips as they're coming out in the springtime as well. So it depends a lot on what your overall goal is. White pines don't normally need much pruning. And when they're young, I wouldn't worry about pruning them at all. But in the dead of the winter, this is a good time to prune them.
All right. Texter says, can herbaceous peonies be planted in the spring? What about tree peonies? I've had good luck transplanting peonies in the fall.
That's exactly right. You can plant them in the spring when you buy them in a container. That's the best way to do a tree or regular herbaceous. If you have them in the ground and you want to move them, the fall is the best time to move them. So peonies, yeah, we move those in the fall, and that is a job. Peonies have a gigantic big root system. They're hard to transplant because there's a lot there. Most people don't get the whole peony. There's a little bit of it will be left, and you'll see a little old peony coming up where you thought you got all the peony. But yeah, so fall is the transplant time.
Another texter wants to know, is it safe to use Miracle-Gro products with seedlings?
Well, you do have to be careful because seedlings, normally fertilizer is not what's limiting. They're just very small and young and getting going. So usually you don't need to fertilize them until they're up to the 2 or 4 true leaf stage. So the first leaves are the seed leaves, and then after that, you want to see a few leaves out on these plants before you need to fertilize.
Speaking of orchid care, Texter says, mine was doing very well, had 4 buds, but rather than open and flower, they began to dry up and die. It had flowered before. The rest of the plant appears healthy.
Yeah, that is unfortunate because if you get that far to get the buds, that's showing that the plant has enough reserves, that growing conditions are good. But unfortunately, then if they fall off, that means something went wrong. It didn't get enough water. Somehow conditions changed. And, yeah, I find orchids are challenging, but many people find that they're quite easy. They're very specialized, and you have to have really good light conditions. They do need fertilizer. They need a regular application of fertilizer, and you have to really understand how to water them without overwatering.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. About this, so we talked earlier about this, and I'm glad this texter said this. Where do I get and how do I get a soil test?
Yes, the soil tests are done at the University of Minnesota over on the St. Paul campus. You can find the website just by searching under extension.umn.edu soil test, and it will tell you how to take the soil test and send it in. It's, I believe it's still $17 for the soil test, and you get a nice representative sample, and then you either send that in or you take that over to St. Paul to the soil lab. So it does get busy in the spring and things back up, but of course the challenge is getting the soil, because now it's frozen. So it's hard. But once things thaw out in the spring and you can go around, look on the website, because you want multiple samples together and you mix that up, you only need about half a cup, but it has to be a good representative sample.
We have exactly 60 seconds to go, Mary. And this texter says, when to plant and how deep a dahlia bulb?
Well, dahlias are very cold sensitive, so you want to wait till all the chance of frost is over. And then the depth is, the depth of those dahlia tubers is, that's 2-3 inches. And you always have to have an eye on the tuber. So it's kind of specialized, but those are tropicals. They love the warm, hot conditions, and they don't like cool conditions.
All right, we're out of time. Mary, it's good to see you again. What's that website
great
for the U of M?
Great to be here. So extension.umn.edu, and then click on garden. That will answer all of your yard and garden questions. I'm going to look up what should we be seeding when.
Good.
What seeds to start now? I think I'll write a yard and garden news article on that.
You have homework to do.
I have homework.
Thanks, Mary.
My pleasure.
Good to see you. Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota.